her wicked stepmother. My first memory is playing the violin.
Ah, okay, I get it.
She's gonna puke out her feelings, probably triggered by that hurricane of a meltdown she had earlier. I mean, what the fuck was that about? She lost her goddamn mind.
And you're in bed with her right now.
So fucking what? She wants me here. Why not take what she's offering?
I don't know how old I was.
Jesus, I should just kiss her so she'll stop talking. I should not let her tell me these things. I don't care about any of it. I'd like to fuck her, and I'd like to get even with Jordan, but that's it.
Except, rational me points out, he did ask her for her story yesterday, practically ripped it out of her, and she sent that poem, which you read and discarded with no more thought given to what lies underneath than how it helps you play the game with Jordan.
In my defense, I did just read it again, paying more attention this time.
Maybe two, she continues. The violin didn't magically appear in my life. My parents bought it. This tiny little thing that could only fit the fingers and hands of a toddler.
I'm not a fucking therapist. I mean,
this should be very obvious to any sane person, but apparently Evangeline Rolaine is insane.
And I didn't know it then, but it was going to save my life one day.
I think about that for a second, wondering if it's figurative or literal.
By the time I was 8, I was a star. I had met kings and princesses and rock stars
and talk show hosts
and more members of Congress and local reporters than I could count.
She sighs.
And by the time I was 10,
the silence that follows lingers for a long time. If I was talking to her, I might feel pressure to prod her along. And I am, in fact, pretty fucking curious about what happened by the time she was 10. So, if I was talking to her, that prodding might even be genuine. But she never picks it back up. Her fingers begin wandering around on my chest again, feeling my ribs like they are fascinating. And when she lowers them down to the waistband of my jeans, there's a moment when I have an urge to stop her, to say, nah, let's just wait on that, okay? Or, you've had a rough day. How about we just go to sleep? But I can't talk to her. So I can't say any of that. And I've already decided to fuck her, and now she's practically asking for it. So, but, fuck.
Chapter 25. Evangeline. He stops me before I can get any further. His hand covers mine, holds it still on the lower part of his stomach. What? I ask. I want to take the blindfold off so badly. I want to see him. I want him to talk to me. And not over that static intercom, either. I want his unfiltered voice. He slides my hand up to the middle of his stomach and keeps it there. I sigh, because I can take a hint. He doesn't want me. Last night was just a tactic, a way to make me stay. Tonight, after my display downstairs this afternoon, well, I can read between the lines as well as anyone. Tonight he's probably just thinking I'm crazy, and I need a babysitter, and his kiss surprises me. His lips are soft as they touch mine, his tongue sweet as it sweeps into my mouth. But as soon as it begins, it ends. He untangles himself from my embrace, gets up out of bed, and walks out. I sit up. And for a half a second, my heart beats so fast I get dizzy. That's the only thing that stops me, the fear of a full-on anxiety attack, because I want to run after him. I want to turn him around, look him in the eyes, see his face, and tell him to finish what he started. I don't bother with any of that. I give up, instead. Flop back onto the pillows, leave the blindfold in place because I decide I kinda like being blind. I've been unable to see anything past my fear for so long now. What's the point? Fine, I say. Fine, I get it. That's all I have anymore. Acceptance. And disappointment. This whole fucked up life can just go to hell. I wake up with the sun. The blindfold is tangled in my long hair. My eyes are tired from yesterday's tears. And the only thing I want is to go back to sleep. The intercom speaker crackles like a warning, snapping me back to reality. I look over at it and wait. So many seconds go by, I almost think he's not going to say anything. But then, he eats lunch at the Mile High Cafe next to the Capitol building. 11:45 every single day he's in court. And every day this week he is. So. The crackling stops, leaving me alone to figure that statement out. My response is a laugh. Downtown? I ask the chandelier. Are you fucking stupid? That's like, I don't really know how far away it is, but just a few nights ago it was insurmountably far. I might as well just go home if I'm going to go to the fucking Capitol building. So go, he says. Asshole. You wanted to see him. That's where he'll be every day this week. Go. Don't go. Fuck if I care. You're just a job, Evangeline. I'm just a babysitter to make sure you don't do anything stupid.
That's not what you are. You're a watcher, not a sitter. I don't need a goddamn sitter. You're supposed to be helping me. You're supposed to be...
I did help you, he says, cutting me off. I got you out of the house, in a public place, among more people than you've been in the middle of in a fucking decade. And then you came home and broke shit, like a fucking kid. No, like a spoiled fucking kid. Go see him. Don't go see him. I really don't give a fuck. But don't tell me I'm not trying to help you, because I'm doing my best.
The crackle cuts off and the silence returns to the room like a ghost haunting its childhood home.
Chapter 26. Ixion. Watching her struggle with her decision for the next 2 hours would be kind of fun if it wasn't so depressing. She finds the notebook I left her on the kitchen counter and writes in it for a while, even though I never asked her for another story. I think I'm way too involved in this thing right now. But I'm really fucking hoping she goes to see Jordan, because I need to get the hell out of this house for a while. This place might be huge. Way too big for one person and her stalker living in two spaces so far apart, they might as well have different addresses. But the walls are closing in on me. As someone who likes to bail at every opportunity and just fucking leave everything behind, being forced to stay put in this goddamn room is starting to take its toll. I get dressed, just in case she surprises me, and then pull up Jordan's contact and press it. What now? He asks, but he still answers on the first ring, which kind of makes me smile. I'm fucking bored. He sighs. I can just picture him running his fingers through his hair in frustration. Ixion, I do not have time for you today. I have court in 3 minutes. Want to have lunch? He scoffs. No, I gotta go. Why? I ask. Why did you really come looking for me? I don't have time. You know the answer, I say, so just say it. Ix, that was always your problem, you know that? You want things, and when you don't get them, you tear the world apart. Just like Evangeline, I want to add. But he won't get it, and I can't explain it. And fuck it. Fuck you! Yeah, I say, fuck me. He hangs up without saying goodbye, leaving me to stare at the phone as the call fades to the home screen. They're made for each other, I realize. Jordan and Evangeline. Both a couple of spoiled fucking rich people who think sadness is a badge of honor and chaos is something you hand out like spare change to a homeless person. How do I get there? Evangeline's question snaps me back to the job. She's looking up at the grand foyer camera, standing in the middle of the stairs, so she's more or less eye level. There's no intercom in the foyer, which is weird, I think, but whatever. Not my stupid design. So when I press the button and talk to her, it comes from every speaker in the house. The closest must be the office, because her head darts in that direction. There's a computer down in the basement office. Pull up a fucking map. Dick, she says. You know what? The only reason I'm going is to get away from you. I'll be there too, Evangeline. You can't get rid of me. Watching, she snaps, like a creepy stalker. Yep, I say. I follow her on camera as she finds the basement stairs, descends, and then wanders around looking at the games and the TV, then finally settles in front of the computer and starts typing. A few minutes later, she's printing something, and then she snatches it up and stomps up the stairs. I should follow her on the cameras, but I don't. I'm too busy wondering what she wrote in that notebook instead. I want to grab it, but I can't. Movement on the camera catches my eye. Evangeline is walking back down the grand foyer stairs, completely dressed. I'm talking hat, gloves, coat, sunglasses, scarf, the whole deal. Then more movement, as one of my monitors picks up a cab pulling up in front of the house. But I smile at her tenacity, her grit, her gumption, her balls. So I get up, put on my coat, and follow her out.
Chapter 27. Evangeline. There's a moment as I get in the cab, right after I hand the driver the printout with the address of my destination, when I wonder, should I just go home? I don't need my things inside the house. I didn't bring much. Wouldn't even miss that stuff. But then I picture my sad life, the emptiness of it all, the loneliness, how desperate I was for a change last week and how I seem to be on a new path this week, and decide, not yet. Not yet. I can leave any time I want, walk out, go back, or even just walk out and go forward. This isn't a chance to escape. It's an opportunity to grow. And now that I know there's a computer in the basement, how the fuck did I not know there was a basement? God, I'm so oblivious to the world around me. And now that I know I can call a cab anytime I want, well, the urgency to find a way out of this messy plan seems to have dissipated. I might even have hope. Not the hope of dreams. I already had that when I agreed to this crazy scheme. But real hope. The dream of playing my violin again, of playing in front of an audience, of making money again, and being whole again, and letting go of the past and living again. Well, that's something quite different than actually taking steps towards that goal. Dreams are just that. Wishes. But getting this cab feels like an accomplishment. And yes, that's sad. Most people wouldn't see this as an act of courage, but I do. And anyway, I'm intrigued. I want to see this Jordan again. He was very attractive. I want to know more about this game he's playing with me, why he's playing it. And even though X said I wasn't allowed to talk to him, who gives a fuck what X wants? This isn't about him. This is about me. So I've already decided that if I see Jordan today, I'm talking to him. He's not going to slip away like he did yesterday. I'm going to ask him just what the fuck he's doing. I'm going to ask him if Lucinda gave him permission to put X in that house, if they know what he's doing with me. I have decided to take control. So there. Take that, Mr. X. Far too soon, the cab pulls up to a curb and stops.
1275,
the driver says. I hold up my credit card, ready to hand it over, but he says,
"You have to use the machine."
He nods his head at the thing mounted on the back of the headrest. I fumble with that for longer than seems appropriate, but the device seems to be made for idiots and has been programmed to walk even the most clueless people through the act of paying for a cab ride, so about a minute later, I manage to conclude the transaction. And then it's time to get out. It occurs to me then, I don't have a way to get back. Jesus, I don't even know if I remember the address.
"Lady,"
the driver says.
"You need to get out now."
I nod at him, take a deep breath, and open the cab door to the bustle of the strange city I've called home for almost 10 years. The second I close the door, the cab pulls away and I become just another person in his past. I stare up at the sign, Mile High Cafe. There are a ton of people coming and going, all of them wearing business attire. Men in expensive suits, women in professional dresses, all ages, but mostly middle-aged. The courthouse is nearby. I can see the golden dome of the Capitol building from where I stand. So these people probably all have an intimate relationship with the city that feels like a stranger to me. "Don't wuss out now, Evangeline," I mutter under my breath. "You're already here. Just go inside." It's a confident statement. Like going inside is so easy. Like going inside is normal. Something I do every day. Just go inside. But none of that is true. And even though my head is trying to trick my body isn't listening. Because I'm suddenly breathing too fast, and my heart is beating too fast, and the whole world is moving too fast. "How many?" the woman asks. "Just one?" I realize the bustle of the crowd has pushed me into the door of the cafe, and the woman asking me how many is actually the hostess. Yes, I manage to spit out. Just one. She scans the room. Every table is full, and I feel stupid all of a sudden. Like, how did I not anticipate that the restaurant would be filled to capacity when it's lunchtime? Well, the young girl finally says, there's a gentleman over there sitting alone. Do you want me to go ask him if he'd mind sharing with you? Oh, no, I stammer out my objections. I don't think he won't mind. And then the hostess laughs. In fact, he told me when he came in if anyone needed a seat, he's happy to share. She bustles off before I can answer, but I watch in utter horror as she approaches the man, points to me, and then they talk about me as they look at me. I turn to flee and bump right into a man's chest. Dark wool overcoat. Leather-gloved hands reach out to steady me. Firm grip on my shoulders. And when I raise my eyes to see who is blocking my way, I realize it's Jordan. I whirl back around, and the hostess is there grabbing a menu. Come on, she says. He's happy to help. I follow her for no other reason than I cannot think of a single other thing to do. I just obey automatically. On autopilot. Just get me away from the man I came to see. The hostess stops at the table and pans her hand towards the empty chair. Here you go. Have fun, you two. She leaves, and I'm stuck there. I don't look at the man I'm supposed to be sitting with because I'm too busy looking back at Jordan. He catches my gaze, which almost sends me into a panic, so I sit down and turn my head away, right into the direct gaze of my table stranger. Hi, the guy says. I'm Mike. And you are? He extends his hand, but all I can do is stare at it, so it's withdrawn just as fast. Angela, I say, reverting back to my standby public persona.
Nice to meet you, Angela. Do you work around here?
I look at him, thankful I still have my scarf over my face and my sunglasses covering my eyes. Just be normal. Just be normal. I chanted in my head. Yes, I lie. At the courthouse. I'm new. First day. There you go, I say to myself. Good job.
Well, you're part of the crowd now, he laughs. Everyone eats here at lunch. It gets pretty busy around this time, and I always eat alone, so I offer up my table when I can.
Thank you, I say, remembering my manners.
So what kind of food do you like?
I chance a glance over at Jordan. He's still looking at me, so I play it off like I was just scanning the room, then remember I have a menu I can pretend to study. Sandwiches, I reply to the man's question.
You should definitely get the club, then. It's fantastic. They put a little avocado on there. Really, really good.
What can I get you to drink? A waitress asks. I look up at her, ready to die from all this very sudden, very intimate attention, and blurt, Water and I'll take the club sandwich. Coming right up, she says, taking my menu away with a smile.
So,
my impromptu date seems to be chatty, and I think in my head, why me?
You'll probably have to take your scarf off if you want to eat.
Right, I say, slowly unwrapping my scarf. It would draw far more attention to keep it on than it will to take it off. At least that's what I tell myself. But the whole time I'm sneaking glances over at Jordan, wishing I wasn't stuck talking to this guy instead of him.
Do you know him? The guy asks.
Who?
That man you're staring at.
What? I laugh it off as I fold my scarf up and place it in my lap. No, I'm not looking at anyone in particular, just, you know, people watching.
Ah, he says. I like to watch people too. That's why I come in here alone. You see all types. It's interesting.
I take another look at my date, intrigued by his answer. He's probably a few years older than me. Maybe early 30s. Light brown hair, bluish eyes. Handsome. He's wearing a suit, but every man in here seems to be wearing a suit. What did you say your name was? I don't even know how I get those words out, because as soon as I realize I've asked him a direct question, my heart races in a way that scares me.
Mike,
he says, smiling. He extends his hand again. I shake it this time, but when I withdraw, he holds on to it, which forces me to look him in the eyes to see what the hell he's doing.
You can take off the gloves, too, you know. Gonna be hard to pick up a sandwich with gloves.
And he starts pulling on the fingertips of my glove, removing it, sliding it down my hand in a way that makes me hold my breath. I pull away quickly, but the glove is off, my hand exposed. He reaches for me again, his fingertips gently squeezing as he says,
That's better. How about the sunglasses now?
I jerk away, my hand unconsciously flying up to touch the lenses, as if to make sure they're still there. No, I say. I have sensitive eyes and I have to wear them when I'm in the sun. He looks over to the window, is about to say something about the gray, overcast day, but then simply shrugs.
Okay. Well, I'm done, and I gotta get back to work. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow?
Sure, I say, not knowing why I say it, because I don't work at the fucking courthouse and I won't be back tomorrow.
Nice meeting you, Angela.
I nod my head, but don't meet his eyes as he gets up.
And lunch is on me. Don't worry about it. Thanks for the company.
Yeah, I say, glancing up at him, then quickly averting my eyes. If I can't see him, he can't see me. I want to roll my eyes at myself.
Bye.
I nod, so he just leaves, resigning himself to the fact that I'm not going to chat him up any further. I stare at my one gloveless, exposed hand for a few seconds, then quickly put the glove back on. The scarf is still in my lap, so I wrap that around my face, too. Finally, all covered up again, I let myself breathe. I am stupid.
Did you want this to go?
I look up at the question and find the waitress holding a plate with my sandwich. Yes, please. She leaves to wrap it up, and all I can think about is getting the hell out of here when I suddenly lock eyes with Jordan again. He smiles at me, gives me a little wave. I look away and close my eyes, forcing myself not to panic. Why the fuck did I come here? What the hell was I thinking? I stay like that, my head bowed, my eyes closed, until the waitress is saying, Here you go, as she slips a gray cardboard box in front of me. Your check is all set. Thanks for coming. I nod, take my box, and then get up, fully intending on escaping without looking at Jordan again. But I can't help it. And when I find his face, he's already found mine. The doors open as a man enters, and I slip past him and out into the gray afternoon. A moment of pure panic passes through my body as I realize I have no way to get home. I'm not even sure where home is, but then I see a cab, and I raise my hand like I've seen people do in movies, and it stops for me. I climb in, and when the driver says, Where to? I say, The Botanic Gardens. I get dropped off at the main visitor center, which happens to be close to the greenhouse I was in the other day, so finding my way back to the path that leads to the house isn't too hard. When I finally get back inside, I collapse onto the grand foyer stairs and look up at the camera in the chandelier. Fuck you, I say. But the house seems empty for some reason. Like, I can just feel his eyes are somewhere else, not on me. And even though I've been living with that same feeling for almost a decade, it feels lonely now. I go upstairs, take off my coat, my scarf, my gloves, my shoes, and I climb back into bed, exhausted and sad, and more unsure of myself than I have ever been in my life.
Chapter 28. Ixion. When I get back to the house, I rewind the footage of her return. See the slump in her shoulders. The sadness and uncertainty in her expression. She is the perfect image of complete surrender. I wonder what she thought of Jordan. I wonder what was going through her head when she found him staring at her. Was it intrigue? Fear? Longing? Whatever it was, this was a good day for me, and the night is about to get even better. I remember the notebook in the kitchen and go upstairs to retrieve it and read what she wrote. Did you ever feel like a diamond ring? Just a ring on a finger, sitting pretty, on the hand that makes you sing. preposterous child with anonymous smiles and weariness dancing on your strings. Well, I have. That was me. Invisible except for my ability. So I said no and threw a fit, and yes, became a little sick of the music and the stage and all the things they made me play until they sucked me dry and left me standing there alone, small, but tall, and refusing to cry. I am just a diamond ring. That's why I'm here. I have to read it like 15 times. Not because I don't understand her metaphors or literary interpretation of what a diamond ring is, but because I do. I wasn't going to write more of my story, but maybe she just needs to know, well, that people have fucked up experiences and they're okay afterward. Except I'm not really a good example, am I? Rational me pops up, taking my side for once, telling me, could have been worse. Could have. You're still here. I am. You're helping her. Just another stand-up guy, I guess. Which makes me sigh and roll my eyes. And pick up the pen and start to write. I could start my story with boring details about how we all met, what we all do, and how it all intertwined to make us what we are today. But no one wants the boring backstory, and I'm sure you're far more interested in what she looked like. Or what he and I saw in her. Or how we ended up fucking each other just a few years later. She was a foul-mouthed tomboy, who did her best not to look like she was modeling underwear on a catwalk while wearing wings, but failing miserably at it. But that was how it came off. She is that girl, the elusive dream woman who can play poker and look like she's only there as a prop for her equally beautiful boyfriend until she kicks your ass and leaves you broke. We had the same passion, filmmaking. Jordan was an undergrad at Stanford at the time. She and I went to UCLA. Alexander, the fourth wheel in this quasi-quad, was a consultant for the film industry. He, like Jordan, fell in love with Augustine the moment he saw her. It's just a natural consequence of meeting her. She fell in love with me, but not the way they thought. She dated them both, sometimes together, sometimes not. It was always a game. I was just her best friend. A guy she could and would come to just to talk things through. Just to get a bad day off her mind. Just to have fun and not have the night end with drama or jealousy. Alexander and Jordan shared her regularly for a couple years. And it was fine because Jordan was up at Stanford and the rest of us were in L.A. And he only came down every once in a while. And Alexander didn't mind sharing a few times a year if it meant he could have her to himself all those other nights in between. But then, Jordan got into UCLA Law School, and suddenly there he was. Every day, every night, every time we turned around, there he was. And he said to me one night, Ixian, I can remember that night like it's happening right now. What we were wearing, what we had for dinner, what we were drinking. How he almost whispered the words in the bar that night. He said, Ixian, why haven't you ever... He never finished because just then Alexander and Augustine joined us. And drinks were flowing and we were all talking and laughing. And you know how it goes. Why haven't I fucked her? That's what he wanted to know. He asked me again a few days later. But looking back, it all started that night. When they took her home, and I didn't join them. And my answer was, and still would be, if we were still friends, that is, because I have the relationship with her that I want. I should have stuck with that. Should never have let him talk me into it. Should have just walked away. But of course, I didn't walk away. When I'm done writing, I leave the book on the countertop for Evangeline to find when she wakes up. She's stuck in her own privileged childhood. I have decided that's her problem. Her mind didn't mature with her body. She never developed coping mechanisms as a teenager. Why? It's easy to assume. I mean, she was a child prodigy, literally born a genius.
celebrated for her talent, paraded all over the world to perform, applauded by the most important people imaginable. Maybe never even told no. That's the assumption, anyway. But I've learned a thing or two about assumptions over the years, and it's almost never that simple. I hold myself up as Exhibit A. If you were looking at me from a distance, like, say, that sheriff back up in Wyoming, you'd see what everyone sees. Scruffy-faced 30-something man with no direction or purpose who spies on people to make money. If you were a little closer, you might see the trust fund, the exile from the wealthy family, the aimless wandering, the loss. But you'd have to be really intimate with me to see who I really am, what really happens inside my head. You'd have to be Jordan, for example, because he's the only one who knows me. It's a secret he'll keep, I have no doubt. It's not in his best interest for people to see the real me, because then they might see the real him. I ran into Augustine once, about 4 years ago, a few years after all that other shit happened, so she hated me at the time. She didn't even know I was there, probably. I had been erased, for lack of a more literal term. I didn't say anything to her, didn't offer up an explanation, didn't defend myself or my actions, because she wasn't interested. She threw me back the day we sat in that conference room with our respective lawyers and dissolved our business partnership. Over. I was the glue. That was the only thought that swept through my mind that day she pretended I didn't exist. I was the fucking glue. She just never knew it. Jordan was there too, smiling in that fucking suit of his. The only thing that kept me from walking over to him and kicking his ass was the fact that he and Augustine weren't together. She didn't even look at him. I mean, she didn't look at me either. And he wasn't the one she hated. That was me. But it was clear whatever they had was over. Long time ago. They were on opposite ends of the party. It was her wedding. And why Alexander invited us, I can only guess, because he never said. I just showed up, and I'm pretty sure that was what Jordan was doing as well. Augustine never even looked at me.
I'm not going back tomorrow,
Evangeline says, obviously awake and walking down the stairs to the main floor. I'd forgotten where I was for a moment, lost in my last secret memory of Augustine. What's her last memory of me, I wonder? Not a wedding, that's for sure. A day at the table, with the lawyers? What if she sneak in somewhere I was and see me from afar once? I hope she did, and I hope it was a good memory. Maybe her wedding day? Maybe she did see me that day. Maybe Alexander told her I was there, and she walked around looking for me in the gardens. Is it fate, or irony, or was it planned? The fact that Augustine got married at the Denver Botanic Gardens? The fact that Jordan put me here? Brought me into this new game of his? If all the world's a stage, then how do you ever know what's real?
Did you hear me?
Evangeline yells as she reaches the kitchen. I watch for a moment as she spies the waiting book. She looks down, hiding a smile, I'm sure of it, even though I don't have a good view in here anymore. And then she takes the book and walks away to read it. I let her go and press Jordan's contact on my phone. He doesn't pick up, but I leave a message, so who cares? And the message is this. Did you get what you wanted out of her? And that's not sarcasm or cynicism. It's an honest question. Was it worth it? Because it wasn't for me. I wait, like he's there or something. Like in the old days, you could leave a message on the machine and wonder if the person just didn't pick up and was standing right there listening as you poured your heart out. But this isn't those days, and no one has a machine anymore. So it's just voicemail, just some digital cloud that hears your desperate message and gives no shits whatsoever. I end the call and look back at Evangeline, who is sitting on the couch in the ballroom, facing the windows that open to the backyard. She's very absorbed in my story. It's only a few paragraphs, so maybe she's reading it twice. I wonder if Augustine is happy with Alexander. I heard they had a serious separation a few years ago, but got back together. Nothing since that. Evangeline is talking again.
Where's the rest of it? She asks, holding up the book. I want the rest of it.
I press the button on the intercom and say, Where's the rest of your story? I want the rest of that, too. She sighs, loudly, then says,
My story is a poem. It takes time to compose.
I never told you to write a poem, Evangeline. A few scribbled words will suffice. She just scowls at me. I can't tell if that comment makes her angry or sad. Go compose it, then, I say. Leave it on the counter when you're done, and then go upstairs and wait for me.
Will you come up?
She asks. I wonder if Augustine called Jordan when she and Alexander separated. I wonder if they got back together for those few months. I wonder if they talked about me.
Why are you ignoring me?
Evangeline asks. It's such an honest question, and the desperate tone in her voice mirrors my own feelings at the moment, so I say, I'm just admiring you. And it's a lie, of course, because I'm stuck in the past just like she is. But it's also sort of true, because she is very beautiful, especially when she's emotional. It's a tragic kind of beautiful, the kind that makes people look twice. The kind you see in perfume ads or on a fashion runway with the two skinny girls dressed up as someone else, walking with hidden purpose that's really nothing but obvious anguish. Dark and hopeless and emotional. My answer soothes her to the point of softening. She looks at our book in her hands. She's sitting Indian style on the couch, long dark hair hanging to cover her pretty face. And it makes me sad that lies can be so soothing. Makes me feel guilty, too, because it's way too easy to soothe people. You just say what they want to hear and they believe you. Trust you. It works on men, too, I know. I've been that man. But I was the glue, I remind myself. That part wasn't a lie. And I'm the glue now, too. I'm the only thing holding Evangeline Rolaine together at this point. It occurs to me that this is a very serious role and I'm neglecting my duties. Neglecting her in favor of a past mistake. Forgetting why I'm really here. Not here, according to Jordan or her doctor, but here according to me. I don't want to hurt her. I just don't think I can help it. Write your poem, I say into the intercom, and then go upstairs and put on the blindfold. She looks up at the camera I had to rig up after her last tantrum, her expression one of total and utter confusion. Kind of like mine, if I could see it. What? She asks in a soft voice. But there's a hint of disbelief in her question. Like it's exactly what she wanted to hear next. But she can't believe she heard it. Do it. I whisper now. Let most of my words be muffled by the static and crackling of the intercom. She takes a deep breath. Squares her shoulders, like she needs the courage, and begins to write. That's when her phone, sitting on the desk in front of my computer monitor since she left it on that hallway table the second day she was here, beeps an incoming alert. I pick it up. Unable to read the message, but I think it's a voicemail. There are two icons with enough uncracked screen to press them, and neither are for the phone. But I press one until it starts to wiggle and rearrange the icons until the phone is in the right spot. Then I press it and play the message. I listen to it three times, then call the number he left, plotting a new twist to the story we're telling. Evangeline sits there agonizing over her words for hours. Hours. So long the arrangements I start making get made. So long I run out of memories of Augustine to dwell on. So long I get hungry and make a peanut butter sandwich and snap still images of her and then retouch them like I would back in school when I cared about how the fucking pictures turned out. So long I'm just about to scream that nobody gives two fucks about her stupid poem and to just get her ass upstairs so I can come up and fuck her. But then she says, Okay, and stands up, walks to the kitchen, and leaves the book on the counter. She turns, but her hand remains on the cover. Which is just your run-of-the-mill notebook cover, no picture or anything, just plain black. And then she turns back, like she might want to rip those words out of that book and stuff them down the garbage disposal so I never get to see what she wrote. I'm just about to say something when she draws in a deep breath, turns, and walks away,
I don't bother following her steps up the stairs on camera, or along the hallway to the second set of stairs, or up to the bedroom. I don't even watch her take off her clothes, even though I never told her to do that, and slip the tie around her eyes like an obedient child. I'm too busy thinking about the words in that book. Words she wrote but didn't want to write. I just look up a few minutes later and there she is, lying on the bed naked, her fingers between her legs, her mouth slightly open as she rubs her clit, her perfect breasts rising and falling with the fast beating of her heart. She waits for me. I make her wait. I watch, forgetting about the past for once, putting Augustine and Jordan behind me for a while, and just be present as I go upstairs, get her book, sit on the couch where she just was, and open it to the last page. Did you ever feel forsaken? Just a lifetime of waste, as people say they must have been mistaken. Autonomous child, now blasphemously wild, alone and lost, and afraid of being broken. Well, I have. That was me. Tired of all the publicity. Choppy waves of tattered lace and only shadows on the stage. So I withdrew and stayed alone, withdrawing further from my throne of greed and hunger and all the ways they threw me under until there was nothing left but the fractured lights of night and the disillusionment of wonder. I have been forsaken. That's why I'm here. I think I stare at that poem for eternity. Several eternities. I read it 923 times. Or a dozen, at least. I scrutinize every word she chose for me. Every secret she just revealed. And now I'm her. I hold the book up to the camera lens she is most definitely not looking through and ask myself who is not on the other side. Where's the rest of it? I need the rest of it.
Chapter 29. Evangeline. There are emotions flowing through me that I can't describe. There are no words for them. It's fear, but longing. It's excitement, but sadness. It's desire, but anguish. It's crazy. That's all I know for certain. I am not a part of the real world. I am not here or there. I am not living or dead. I am something in between. It scares me, but I don't care. It feels like hours later when I finally hear the creaking of the stairs under his heavy footsteps. I stop breathing. My hand stops playing with the sensitive skin between my legs. The wetness is already there, primed for him. Please, God, make him touch me. The door opens with a soft rush of air. The room fills up with his presence. Even though I have the blindfold on and I can't see anything, I feel him from across the room. Please, actually comes out of my mouth. Begging. I'm begging for his attention. And then he's there, sitting on the bed next to me, his fingertips pinching my nipple, the heat of his body against the coolness of mine. I shiver, sending a chill up my spine, making the nipple he's still playing with bunch and peak and turn into a hard rock under his touch. His hand rests on the inner flesh of my thigh and gently urges me to open my legs. I suck in air and hold it again, because he makes me forget how to breathe out. My body is squirming, still begging for more. I want him to cover me, put his whole chest over my beating heart and cover me up, make me melt into him and not be alone anymore. But he does something better. He slips his hand up and down my inner thigh, lightly brushing my skin, and with each sweep, he takes it just half an inch further, further down, until he's rubbing the inside of my knee, further up, until his knuckles bump against my clit. I writhe with anticipation, buck my back with expectations. I reach for his face, find a scratchy jawline, hold him like that, imagining his face in my mind. My finger finds his mouth and his lips part. He sucks on me, his tongue caressing the tip of my finger, his teeth nipping at it, and I die. I swear to God, I die. Then he holds my hand, withdraws the finger from his mouth, and places my palm on my own stomach. He slides it down, until it's back between my legs. But he holds it there, and when I begin to rub myself, he slaps my tits so hard I gasp. "No," he whispers, and I want to scream, "Tell me what you want. Tell me what to do." And that scares me because I never like being told what to do, not since... But he's leaning down now, his warm breath sweeping across my nipple as he takes it into his mouth and sucks and bites, and I might lose myself in this moment. I might just float into nothingness and be no one, ever again. Except his mouth travels downward, his tongue gently licking the skin of my belly, until his face is buried between my legs, his scratchy jaw rubbing against the soft, tender skin of my upper thighs. And just the slightest movement of his breath near my pussy is enough to make me gasp. A finger slips inside me just as his tongue licks my clit. I might lose it. I might just come. Two fingers inside me, stretching me open as his face dips down, deeper, lower, until his tongue penetrates me the way I wish his cock would. I can't control myself. I can't. I just moan and whimper and grab his hair, which feels soft and clean, and I want to take the blindfold off to see what color it is, but then I don't. Because I like not seeing him. I like not knowing what will come next. I like all this uncertainty. And I think I like him, too. I never want him to leave me. I want him to slip into this bed and stay with me, and we can... He stands up, and all the sensations stop. I panic, nearly hyperventilating. But then I hear the jingle of his belt, and the swoosh of a shirt going over a head, and the kicking off of boots that thud on the hardwood floors. And then his warm, naked body covers me, just the way I wanted it to. And I hold his face in my hands as he kisses me, deeply and lovingly, and with longing that you don't expect from a stranger. But he's not a stranger anymore. He's my stranger. He's my watcher. He's mine. So I say that. I say, "You're mine." And he laughs, but it's not a laugh. It's an agreement, or maybe a disagreement, because he's not mine. I'm his, and he knows this. His knees kick mine open wide, and I hold them like that, spread wide for him as he positions his body in place. His hard cock finds its way home to the opening of my pussy. And I'm so wet, but when he forces the wide girth of his cock inside me, it hurts. But oh God, does it hurt in all the right ways? My legs wrap around him, squeezing him to me, and I wonder, what kind of a sick person must I be to let a stranger fuck me like this? And I think he's thinking the same thing, but neither of us stop. We just need to be held, and caressed, and yes, fucked. And I don't know how I know he needs it as much as I do, but I know. He's lost, too. He lost himself, like I lost me, or something, the way I lost my childhood. Or someone, the way I lost my family. So I say, "I'll be that," to him. And I don't exactly feel him stiffen, and I definitely don't hear him agree. But we agree. I know we do. As soon as that thought enters my head, he pushes himself deeper inside me. And even though I'm blindfolded underneath this man's tie, I close my eyes anyway, because it just feels too good to keep them open. He goes slow after that. We both do, because we're in this together now. Fully invested in the watched-watcher dynamic. Fully committed to whatever this is. Sick fantasy, or inevitable solution. It doesn't matter because it's ours. So I just enjoy it. And I think he enjoys it too. Because he begins to moan a little, just like me. And he starts kissing my neck, the way I'm hungrily teasing the skin of his bare shoulder with my mouth. His hands slip under my ass and squeeze as he flips us over so I'm on top. I don't even know how to process that change of position. It stills me for a moment, and I sit on his hips, straddling him. The heaviness of my breasts eased by the grip of his hands, his cock still inside me as my hips begin to move a little, my hands pressing on his hard, muscular chest. And the urge to lift my blindfold and look at him is almost overwhelming. My hand actually flies up to my face, but his hand is there to catch it, like it was meant to be there all along, and he says, "Shh," and lowers it back to his chest. So I give in, and go with it, and let him lead from below. His hips begin thrusting upward, taking me for a ride as his cock slips in and out of me as I rise and fall with the motion of us. Then his hand is gripping my ass again, and for a second, I think he's gonna flip me over again, and even though it never happens, I mourn the imaginary loss of my top position, until his finger slips into my asshole and... holy fucking shit. It feels so good. Like, too good to be happening. He pushes against the tight muscles that prevent his entry, making me gasp, making me whine with pain. But then a second later, his finger is inside my ass, and his cock is inside my pussy, and I feel him from both sides. I come. I can't help it. I just let go, and there's a wailing, pleasure-filled scream coming from my mouth as he fucks me harder from underneath. I coat his cock with my slick release, making it easier to thrust himself up inside me. I respond in a way I didn't think possible, didn't think I knew how, but I fuck him back with abandon, because there are so many more things I want to do with him tonight. I want to suck his cock. I want it so far down my throat I choke on it. I want to lick his balls and grab him with my fist and pump him up and down. I want to sit on his face and rub my pussy all over his chin. I want his hands around my throat, holding me from behind, forcing me to be still, to be owned, to be his as he takes whatever he wants. "I want all of it," he laughs, still pounding me. It's a small, gruff, deep-throated laugh that sends a chill of pleasure through my body as my pussy slides up and down his shaft. He wraps his strong arms around me, pulls me down into his chest, and holds me there, tightly, for just a moment. And then he throws me off, scrambles around, and holds my face in the tight grip of his thumb and forefinger until I open for him and taste his hot, salty cum shooting across my tongue. He groans, and I want to come again just from the sound of him. Dear God, he makes me feel like an animal. He collapses off to the side, breathing hard, but smiling. I can just tell he's smiling, so I smile too. "I want to see you," I say. He says nothing, just leans over, kisses me, not even caring that his cum is all over my face, and whispers, "That would ruin everything." A moment later, he's up off the bed, and even though I want him to stay, I think he's right. I think there are so many ways to ruin this, and only one way to make it right, with the blindfold. So I let him go. I don't take off my blindfold. I don't even get up to wash my face. I want his claim on me all night.
Chapter 30. Ixion.
It's a peculiar thing to feel reluctance about a woman I'm involved with. I mean, typically I don't feel anything at all. Not true. I feel satisfaction in the moment of climax. But I feel a reluctance to leave Evangeline after we're done. I do leave her. Feeling things and doing things don't always coincide in my mind. So I do leave her. But I don't want to. And then, when I get back down in the basement, I have a strange premonition that I'm taking this too far. That what I'm doing is crossing a line. Hers, for sure. But his, too. And if I go through with this, it's an ending of sorts. With her, for sure, again. And him, too. Not that we didn't already end things. That happened a long time ago. But he moved on and I sort of didn't. I sort of stayed behind. Sort of dwelled. And let it all fester and build into an anger I had no idea I was holding inside me. Until I saw his face when he came to bail me out of jail. And now I'm pissed. And I'm sorry, too. Sorry that Evangeline is a part of this. Sorry that I'm playing his game with her. Sorry if she gets hurt. And then I wonder, maybe there's another way to get what I want. So I stay up for a while looking for information, watching the footage, reading her story, her poem, and her Wikipedia page over and over again. Wanting more because I know the answer is out there. I mean, can she really hate me if I fix her in the end? Why do I care if she hates me? I don't know. I do. So I sit down to write. And even though it takes a lot longer to get it right this time, I put in the effort. Her poem is like a challenge, a way to turn her past into art, or something like that. By the time I'm done, it's nearly 6 a.m., and I never went to sleep. I tell myself, no big deal. I've stayed up days at a time before. But I lose the battle as soon as I get back into bed after putting the book on the counter for her.
Chapter 31. Evangeline. I wake before dawn, rested and filled with hope and maybe even a little satisfaction. I want more of last night, so after I shower, I put on a clean nightgown and go downstairs, not really expecting the book to be waiting for me, but it is, and I don't even know what that feeling coursing through my body means. Is it elation? I don't know. I just pick up the book, run back up the stairs, and get into bed to continue the story where he left off. The first time Jordan kissed me, I punched him in the face. The second time I was drunk, and we had a girl in between us, so I didn't really care. The third time he sucked my cock afterward. I stopped talking to him for months after that. It was senior year of high school, and even though I'm not gay, and I've always known I wasn't gay because I really like pussy, I'm really not bisexual either. I mean, yeah, okay. I'll fuck with Jordan if there's a girl involved I like. But anyone else? No, I'm not into it. I was just into him. That's it. And trust me when I say that has passed. I'm not interested in spit-roasting you, Evangeline. I don't like to share anymore. I'm not letting you spy on him with the hope that we'll eventually fuck you together.
Then why, I wonder?
When Jordan moved to L.A. for law school, he completely fucked with the dynamic. We were all feeling it, even me. And I wasn't involved with Augustine in that way. But then Alexander got tired of it, and Augustine and Jordan weren't exactly finished yet. So he bailed and they continued. But as I said, Augustine never loved him. She loved me. And maybe it's her fault after all, because it was her idea to bring me in to replace Alexander. Friends with benefits. Does that ever fucking work? I'm not jealous of Jordan. I wasn't jealous then. And I'm not jealous now. He doesn't have her either. So fuck it. We came out even in that respect. I'm not jealous of Alexander, because even though he was the man she chose to marry, she loved me first. I was always her number one, and I didn't need to fuck her to be that. I just was that.
Well, I didn't see that coming. I picture the man at the greenhouse yesterday, his handsome face, his expensive suit, his piercing blue eyes, and I wonder what X looks like. He feels magnificent on top of me, inside me. When I touched his face last night, I could almost see him. His story is like a peek inside the lives of beautiful people. This arrangement is scary and intriguing at the same time, and even though he said in no uncertain terms that he was not after a spit roast, I'm not even sure I know what that means, but I can take a guess. It's hot. I can't deny it. The whole thing is fucking hot. I wait for his instructions, because there was no note about what we're doing today. So I write my next entry, my story almost complete. And when 10 o'clock rolls around and he's still not talking to me, I make a decision.
Chapter 32. Ixion. When I wake up, she's gone. Nothing but a note waiting on the counter for me. It says,
X, I'm going out, but don't worry. I'll be wearing the blindfold for you tonight, not Jordan. Evangeline.
I get dressed, and then I'm gone too.
Chapter 33. Evangeline. I know that to most people, what I just did was not monumental. I walked out of a house, under no one's instructions and with my own purpose. It's something small children do all the time. But for me, it's exhilarating.
I feel the change since I've been in the house with X, since we've been trading stories. I want to know who he loved so much.